the Taliban's security nightmare. The Islamic State in Afghanistan has claimed a bomb attack against the Hazara minority. As it's struggling to win international recognition, can the Taliban alone take on the threat of armed groups in the country? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. ISIL in Afghanistan has claimed responsibility for a suicide bomb attack on Friday in the northern city of Kunduz. Dozens of people were killed and others injured by the explosion inside a crowded Shia mosque during Friday prayers. It's the latest in a series of attacks by the group. The violence poses a threat to the Taliban, who promised to establish security that the former government couldn't provide. It's also pledged to protect ethnic and religious minorities. Al Jazeera's Hashim Al-Habara reports from Mazar-e-Sharif.
These are the moments after a bomb blast tore through a mosque packed with worshippers. Security officials say a suicide bomber managed to get inside before blowing himself up, killing and injuring scores of people. ISIL in Afghanistan has claimed responsibility. The mosque is in the town of Khanabad in Kunduz city that's home to many members of the Shia Hazara minority.
It was around 1:40 p.m. All the Muslims had gathered in the mosque for Friday prayers, and then I heard the explosion. I was nearby and what I saw was just like the end of the world. Why is this happening to the Muslims? Which religion should we adopt where there's nothing like this and killing Muslims is forbidden? Believe God, I can't even talk anymore. I can't tell you how many dead bodies I've shifted in my vehicle. There was no ambulance. May God have mercy on all Muslims.
It's one of the worst ISIL attacks since the Taliban takeover. As foreign forces were leaving in late August, the armed group also claimed responsibility for a suicide bombing at Kabul airport. More than 183 people were killed, including 13 US soldiers. ISIL later said it was behind a series of attacks targeting the Taliban in Jalalabad and Kabul. The Taliban launched a crackdown and arrested dozens of ISIL fighters in those cities. Taliban officials say they are determined to eradicate their rivals. Violence has increased over the last few days. The Taliban's next move is going to be closely monitored by the Afghan people and the international community. The United States is expecting the Taliban to deliver on a promise made in the 2020 Doha Agreement to prevent ISIL from building a base in Afghanistan. The blast in Kunduz underscores the growing challenges the Taliban now faces. Since it took over the country in August, the Taliban prides itself on providing a secure and stable environment. But the attacks in Jalalabad, Kabul, and now this one in Kunduz will increase anxieties among the Afghan people. Hashim Al-Bara, Al Jazeera, Mazar-e-Sharif.
Well, the armed group calls itself Islamic State Khorasan Province, a historical region that includes Afghanistan and other Central Asian countries. It was formed in 2014 by breakaway fighters from the Pakistani and Afghan Taliban groups. They pledged allegiance to the late ISIL leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. They're responsible for some of the worst attacks in Afghanistan and Pakistan in recent years, killing people in mosques, in public squares, and even a maternity ward in Kabul. They're adversaries of the Taliban. ISIL has been highly critical of the Taliban's peace talks and engagement with Washington. ISIL strictly opposes the Taliban's goal of establishing an Islamic emirate within Afghan borders and instead seeks to create a pan-Islamic caliphate. So let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. Faiz Zaland is Professor of Political Science at Kabul University. He joins us now from Kabul. Michael Semple, Chair at the Mitchell Institute for Global Peace, Security and Justice at Queen's University Belfast. He joins us live via Skype from Dublin. And joining us here in Doha is independent Afghan analyst Hashmat Mosli. Good to have you with us, gentlemen. Michael, if we can start with you. Before we can discuss whether the Taliban can deal with the threat of ISIL in Afghanistan. We need to establish the nature of that threat and just how dangerous it is to the Taliban and the people of Afghanistan. How strong a force is ISIL in Afghanistan? What does it want? Where does it get its weapons, its money? And why is it targeting Afghans' Shia minority?
The Taliban regime faces what we could think of as a threat from the left and the threat from the right. The threat from the right is a threat from ISIS. The Taliban can take it extremely seriously. Although ISIS doesn't actually control tracts of territory, it has pockets of support around the country. It has a very effective propaganda operation. It's good at operating undercover. It really terrifies Taliban officials because it has been the most effective organization at carrying out assassinations against them. They've posed as a sort of the jihadi organization for jihadis who consider that the Taliban are far too moderate. Their move against Afghan Shias, I think, really is a way of sort of like staking out their claim to be an organization which is not tempered by the certain amount of moderation and pragmatism which the Taliban have had to embrace. ISIS say that the Shias are heretics, and they back that out with these kind of devastating symbolic attacks against them. I think what the Taliban are really worried is that that ISIS can take away support from them, and that fighters who previously aligned with the Taliban, ultimately, if they don't get what they want in terms of the Taliban regime, that they will end up shifting their support to ISIS. So in a sense, the Taliban find themselves in a dilemma a little bit similar to the one that the Afghan government felt. The Afghan government never really felt that they were going to lose in a direct military conflict with the Taliban. They lost when their forces just disappeared and melted away. The Taliban are really concerned that their fighters could actually go over to ISIS.
Hashmat, I saw you nodding in agreement there. We still haven't addressed where ISIL gets its financing, where it gets its weapons from. How big a threat to the Taliban are they?
Well, I agree with almost all the points made, but the biggest crisis and the challenge facing the Islamic Emirate of the Taliban, more so than the ISIS weapons and their finances, is the issue of legitimacy. The Taliban are now stuck between the struggle of Islam versus liberalism, and the Taliban movement has to find a balancing act, has to find a way, a narrative and a practice that would both satisfy their hardline supporters and also satisfy the hardline liberals of the Western governments, that would then open up the path for the Taliban to get international support. What makes this balancing act much more difficult, as I said, is the issue of the hardliners on the both sides of the spectrum. The question is to what extent the Taliban can soften their position and, as our colleague said, moderate or keep on moderating their position to the Western narrative of global and social and political order. As for the Taliban, or as for the ISIS, where they get their weapons from, predominantly they will get their weapons from the time when they start fighting the Afghan government, taking out small units and getting weapons. Remember, in the time of the war of Taliban against the Afghan government in the past, a lot of weapons came into Afghanistan from Pakistan. The region was always awash with weapons. So small arms that the ISIS has came from there. But predominantly what makes the ISIS or made the Taliban more lethal in the past is their ability to manufacture IEDs, improvised explosive devices, and the bombs that they manufacture and place them in the cars or trucks and blow them in areas that would create instability for whoever is ruling. And the fact that the fact that ISIS at the moment is targeting the Shia community in Afghanistan, it goes back to the war in Iraq and Syria, where the Fatimiyun, the Shia brigade that was created from the Shias of Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, and all over the world. And to some extent, governments of the regions turned a blind eye to the Iranian recruitment of the Shias from Afghanistan. So now the ISIS in Afghanistan is basically going after revenge, attacking those communities. And in that process, unfortunately, a lot of the innocent people and bystanders get killed.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let's bring in Professor Dalan then. Can the Taliban crush its adversaries in Afghanistan, or does it face an ongoing war of attrition?
Thanks for having me. I think what we are discussing, it is not a confined instability or insecurity to Afghanistan and to Afghans as a geography or as a population. ISIS and many other related organizations, they have a globalized agenda. ISIS itself is an imported or taken out of the its main core, Syria and Iraq, from an ideological war and resistance from that region. So fighting ISIS and fighting many others will require to Taliban an international and regional support. It should be fight and it should be contained by all the regional countries for the stability of the region. Better that Khorasan doesn't mean Afghanistan. It includes parts of Pakistan, Iran, India even, and the whole subcontinent. So what we are discussing, it is actually a spillover insecurity from the region to Afghanistan, and it requires regional and international support to Taliban to contain, fight, and eliminate such threats.
Michael, picking up on what Faiz was saying there, and Hashmat before him about this balancing act between hardliners and liberals and its legitimacy, will the international community step in to assist as far as security is concerned? Is it under any obligation to do so?
The answer as of now is no. It is inconceivable that there would be serious, respectable international support for the Taliban in tackling their security challenges, which, of course, are not just ISIS. I mean, they're fighting their other enemies as well. This is the remnants of the old government. This are the representatives of the minorities. So in the present time, present circumstances, absolutely no. And the Taliban will not be surprised with that. After all, there was a fully functioning security apparatus in the country, which had received massive amounts of assistance, perhaps too much. The Taliban saw fit to topple that. I think everybody who previously supported that, they're still licking their wounds. I think most Afghans also believe that what we see in Kabul in the current sort of shape of the Islamic Emirate is not the end of the story. They really are going to have to make some adjustments to incorporate the rest of Afghan society, which has never supported the Taliban. So in the short run, no. But in the long run, of course, these things are going to have to be addressed because, you know, ISIS and basically, you know, the threat of chaos inside Afghanistan doesn't just threaten Afghanistan. It threatens the broader region and as far as Europe. So I think we're going to have to see some political movement, which the Taliban are very reluctant to do. They always love to hold out and avoid compromise. But ultimately, we're going to see some political movement from the Taliban side, some accommodation with the rest of Afghan society. And these will be the key to opening up security assistance and also broader economic assistance. So, we're at the start of the story, not the end of it.
Hashmat, if international security assistance is provided, what exactly would it entail, do you think?
Here is a conundrum. If the international community goes on to support the Taliban, ISIS will say Taliban are the stooges of the Americans and the Western powers. And that will empower ISIS in its propaganda war to win over the youth, especially from other minorities that right now the Taliban, the current government of the Taliban, has sidelined. So there is a potential for recruitment from all other ethnic groups. I am a Tajik. I'm in contact with the Tajiks. And a lot of the Tajik youth are saying, could ISIS be an alternative to fight the Taliban? Because we are left in the middle of a global game. So if the international community does not support the Taliban and the Taliban government starts to become weakened, then ISIS propaganda machine is going to say, did we not tell you that statism or this concept of nation state does not work, that we have to go into a global jihad to create a khilafah that is so large and so big and has all the resources and the population that can sustain itself economically. So these are the debates among the Islamist groups. But when I listen to the Western analysts, there the entire debate is reduced between moderation and between extreme women rights and gay rights and small minorities. These are not the issues that the Islamists are debating among themselves. At the moment, the debate is, does nation state work? Is there any nation state in the Muslim world that the Muslims can be proud of since the end of Khilafah? There isn't, according to their narrative. And the Taliban have come into the fray saying, we are going to create an emirate, again, within the boundaries of international laws. And ISIS saying international laws are made to serve the hegemony or the hegemony of the Western powers. And we have to break that. And this is where the Taliban have to find a narrative, how to create an Islamic state or emirate within the existing boundaries and implement their understanding of Sharia, and how to bring the Western and the global community to help them economically. And there's a stalemate here. And the only beneficiary in this stalemate, as far as I can see in the long run and short term, is ISIS or the Islamic State, as we know it, or some call it Daesh.
Faiz, what's your view on that? If the international community were to assist with security in Afghanistan, would it even mean boots on the ground? Would it be technical existence, for example? If there were forces sent in again to Afghanistan to help prop up the Taliban, to what extent could they find themselves just embroiled in the same kind of never-ending conflict that bogged down US and NATO forces for so long and Soviet ones before that?
I think boots on the ground is not a clever solution to what's going to happen in Afghanistan in coming months. Insecurity in Afghanistan, first of all, it's Afghanistan's issue. The government, or the current government of Afghanistan, must reply to that. They must have a rule in law, and they must show the power, the monopoly of using the power in their geography, or present the sovereignty of the country to the rest of the world. Secondly, getting back any forces from the region, from Russia or from NATO forces, that will escalate the current instability and insecurity. It will attract more recruitment, not only to Daesh or ISIS, but also to other powers who are anti-US or any other foreign countries' presence, military presence in the, on the ground. Thirdly, which is very most important, I think we went through a military conflict, we went through war. Currently, we need to work on the political settlements. Taliban must attract more inclusivity to their government, to their political structure. The region must support Taliban with the poorest borders that we have with Iran, we have with Pakistan and Central Asian countries to eliminate the cross-border terrorism and also sales of those that they are separatist or they are having ideological confrontation with the regional countries. Third, very main important thing is for the European countries and US, they have left Afghanistan an unstable situation. They left Afghanistan facing so many different troubles like poverty, not having jobs, and weak governance. So they need to support the new government in the transition to be stable more. Despite such kind of controversies.
Faith, it's that very point that I want to put to Michael. You said, Michael, that eventually some sort of international assistance will be given, security-wise, to the Taliban. But to what extent is time of the essence, given the state in which Afghanistan was left, and not sort of waiting until the Taliban has met the West's expectations of it concerning human rights and women's rights and all of the other things that they're expecting from the Taliban? The security situation is deteriorating now.
Well, this is exactly the dilemma, but I think this is the kind of message which the Taliban are going to be getting loud and clear, and they're going to wrestle with. How quickly will they be prepared to move, to accommodate, not demands, not just, you know, demands being forced on them by the West. Remember that the move that the Taliban made, you know, into Kabul was something which they decided on. They had, you know, no backing from the Afghan people for this. That they, what they've done in the 2 months that they've been there is that they've divided the spoils exclusively, you know, within their own movement. They promised an inclusive government. They didn't deliver on it. So they shouldn't be surprised when they sit down with Western interlocutors who are all keen to undertake preliminary engagement with them and are basically telling them there is a long list of things you're going to have to do before you do get serious assistance. In the meantime, what they're going to be offered is humanitarian assistance for the population rather than either security assistance or serious economic assistance. And the question is, how quickly can both the Taliban and also other Afghans, because remember, you know, Taliban only represent a small part of Afghan society. Taliban and other Afghans, as they get themselves organized again, how quickly that can they move towards some kind of credible structure, the actual inclusive government which the Taliban promised but did not deliver, because, you know, that is when there will be a realistic prospect of proper security assistance and economic assistance. And the longer it takes, the more damage that will be done in the meantime, because you're absolutely right, Daesh are recruiting as we talk.
Hashmat, the Taliban and the US are currently holding talks in Doha, ostensibly about getting at-risk people out of Afghanistan. The US, of course, wants assurances on women's rights and education. What will the Taliban want, though, from those talks in return? And will security assistance factor into that, do you think?
Yes, for sure. The Taliban would want the American embassy to open for the American government to tell its allies in the region to normalize their relations with the Taliban and to start giving Taliban more than just humanitarian support, that start engaging with the Taliban at a very high level and both political and economic level. They need engagement and they need the money that has been frozen in a World Bank to be released, because Taliban really need that cash. But there's another angle here. I hear that a lot of Taliban leadership are turning again, blaming Europe and speaking about US support. But you can see that in the debate, the Organization of Islamic Countries are completely absent. And the Taliban are not asking the Muslim countries, the Muslim states around the world to come to their support. And that in itself says a lot, that a lot of the governments in the region are not happy that Taliban have come to power, because this model of a Sunni Islamist organization coming to power is seen as a threat by many of the so-called democracies and the kings in the region. And so a lot of the governments around the region are very unhappy about the Taliban assuming power in Kabul. So the Taliban problem stems from, as it was explained by our other guests, that they're not inclusive within the Afghan society. They are not liked within the region, except that Pakistan backs the Taliban, and China would like to have some type of relationship with them for their own, for its own political and national benefits. And internationally, you can see that Organization of Islamic Countries is staying away from the Taliban, EU is staying away from the Taliban, and overall United Nations is staying away from the Taliban. And the Taliban, in the meantime, are being pushed around by ISIS, saying that your model does not work, that we have to extend the fight to the other countries and have a global agenda of jihad and establishment of a khilafah. And this is the problem the Taliban are grappling with. And I don't see any easy way out of it except the Taliban making certain concessions. But the real question is, to what extent can the Taliban change where they do not lose their core constituency, which are the hardliners? There are reports on social media, and I say this very quickly, there are videos on social media where young Taliban fighters are saying, we are just waiting for orders to go into Pakistan and blow ourselves up and commit suicide bombing, because we think that Pakistan government is not an Islamic government. Okay. So within the Taliban, there are that force that has similar ideas to that of ISIS.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for being with us. Faiz Zaland, Michael Semple and Hashmat Mosley. And thank you for watching. Don't forget, you can see the programme again at any time just by visiting the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us at our Facebook page. You'll find that at facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. And, of course, there's the conversation on Twitter. Our handle at AJ Inside Story. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. We'll see you again. Bye for now.